Sean Patrick Maloney, let me start by talking to you about Indian Point. Now, Indian Point, tell us about the genesis of how we've arrived to this point on this nuclear facility.
Well, you know, I think what people may have heard of most recently is there's a very serious situation there with the failure of hundreds of what are called baffle bolts, which are a component that is essential to the effective cooling of the reactor. This is a serious issue, and they shut down Unit 2 there because they had far more of these baffle bolt failures than they expected, hundreds more than they've ever seen or anticipated.
How dangerous? And then, I mean, could we really see a major Three Mile Island here?
Well, look, I would not go that far, but I think that the rule with nuclear energy is when you don't know, don't, right? If you aren't absolutely certain about the safety of the way that place is operating, then you really want to understand the root causes of particular structural failures like this that do relate to critical systems like the cooling systems, which, yes, are what is most dangerous in terms of a major nuclear accident, right, is if you can't effectively cool the reactor. So this is serious. We called on the National Regulatory Commission, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, to stop Unit 2 from reopening until we understood the root causes of these baffle bolt failures. By the way, Unit 3 has continued to operate. We don't know how many baffle bolt issues we have there. Entergy, which, you know, is a private company and has a profit motive, understandably wants to get this thing going as quickly as possible. They tell us it's safe. That's fine. But we don't rely on Entergy. I'm sure they've got good intentions, but we don't rely on them for public safety. We want the federal regulators to do their job. And so that's what I've been talking about most recently. The bigger issue is we need to take seriously, responsibly moving away from this energy source in the heart of the Hudson Valley. And we can do it in a way that creates jobs. If you look at the decommissioning of nuclear power plants in other parts of the country, there's a surge in local economic activity. It's a lot of work. So there's a lot of jobs to be created in doing it. We can repurpose this part of the energy grid, and we can responsibly replace the power through a combination of transmission and generation and conservation so that energy prices stay the same or drop. And we can do this over a responsible period of time of a decade or so. And that's what I'm working for right now. And these safety issues, which we've seen from the baffle bolts issue I just talked about, to a tritium water leak, to a transformer exploding. You know, we've seen a series of low-level safety issues that are of great concern to me, and I think should be of great concern to anybody who lives in the region and who understands that the evacuation plans are never going to work effectively, that we have to move away from this plant. You would never put it there today, but we can do it responsibly in a way that creates economic activity and lowers energy costs.
I actually wanted to follow up on something. You know, you mentioned the word water and tritium, but all around the country, we are finding amounts of lead and other issues like that in the water. How dangerous is this, and what has to be done?
Well, it's the problem with not investing in our own infrastructure is that these chickens start coming home to roost. As you may know, we've just reached a solution to a very thorny issue in Newburgh, where we have contamination, we most likely from the military base there, Stewart, into the primary drinking reservoir for the city. These are called PFCs, PFOAs, and PFOSs. These are contaminants that get in drinking water. They can have very serious health effects. The EPA has just lowered the safe and acceptable levels of these things in water to a point that this is going to be an issue in a lot of communities. There we were able to get the city immediately transferred to a clean source, and ultimately the permanent solution was right now is to have them tapped into the New York City aqueduct, and we were able to do it in a way that the local community didn't have to pay for this. So we got a good result there, but it's an example of what you're talking about, which is that whether it's lead or whether it's contaminations in drinking water, we need to prioritize public health. We need to learn the lessons of Flint, Michigan, which is we can't happy talk this stuff. We can't pretend it's okay when it's not. And we have to get in action immediately. I'm happy to say that's what we've done in Newburgh. And we were able to coordinate the Department of Defense, which has now made Newburgh the number one site that they're investigating around the country because my office, you know, got it moved up on to the top of their list. We also got this great cooperation from the state, the governor's office. We were able to get some help from the city. And working across levels of government and across party lines, we were able to prioritize the health of the people in Newburgh. But this is an issue we see recurring in lots of different contexts, and it's always the same root cause, which is we have to invest in our own country. We have to invest in our own infrastructure. We'll create jobs and long-term wealth, and we'll avoid a lot of these health and safety issues if we do it.
Okay, I wanted to talk to you about an amendment that you've been offering that would ban LGBT discrimination in federal contracts. In other words, you're going to get a federal contract, you got to swear that you're not going to do that, or you got to prove that you're not going to do that. And that's been blocked in the House?
Yeah, I'm sorry to say that the Republicans have been, let me be careful. The Republican leadership has been unwilling to do this, even though I secured the support of 43 Republican members of that majority caucus to support my legislation. So I proved on two occasions that I've got a majority of the House of Representatives, including 40 plus Republicans,
but
who believe it's wrong to discriminate, you know, to fire people for being gay and lesbian, particularly when they're at working at federal contractors who are getting taxpayer dollars. But the leadership, unfortunately, has blocked this.
But, Sean, as you know, there's the Hastert rule. You have to have a majority of the majority.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you have to let – you know, Speaker Ryan has said the House should work its will, and unfortunately, talk is cheap. I mean, if you've got a majority of the House that supports something, particularly non-discrimination, by the way, particularly a civil rights issue, it seems to me it's just wrong to rig the process and block it in the Rules Committee and use a bunch of other tricks to keep it from coming to the floor, because you are, I guess, so worried about, you know, protecting people in the workplace who are getting fired for, you know, being gay or lesbian. I mean, because bear in mind, in 29 American states, you can still be fired for being LGBT or even perceived to be, and there is no legal recourse. The president's action in this area affect employers that cover 28 million Americans in the workforce. And all I was trying to do is say, don't roll that back. Because remember, they were trying to roll it back. And my effort was to say, no, leave it alone. It's working. You know, we shouldn't be going backwards on discrimination issues. And unfortunately, people need to understand there are still people down here who are so extreme or so backward in their thinking that they want to rationalize discrimination against people just because of who they are. And it's wrong.
You have an opponent for your seat. I just wanted to say something. You have one of the more dangerous districts to be in. Most districts, you know, you're a Democratic or Republican, you're going to win. But your district does tend to yo-yo a little bit, go back and forth. That makes you have to work much harder than almost anybody else, right?
Yeah, you bet. And I tell you, that's a good thing. I mean, it makes me work harder. But for the people out there listening, you know, they should be glad that they have a member of Congress who has to be on his toes. And we have too much dead wood in the Congress. We have too many people who are, you know, fat and happy and safe and, you know, going through the motions or playing to the extremes in their own party. I wish everybody felt as, you know, endangered, you know, of losing their, you know, in danger of losing their jobs, because, you know, that's what the public wants. I mean, they want us to be responsive. I mean, if you ask me, you know, gee, Sean, why is it you've helped 3,500 people, you know, in 3.5 years, one at a time? It's because I know I've got to show results. I mean, we've helped 800 veterans. We've helped them get $3 million back they were getting screwed out of by their own government. You know, that's the right thing to do. It's also important to me to be able to say, look, I'm doing the work you hired me to do. I've passed 31 bills through the House, and 17 are now law, making our oil chains safer, investing in infrastructure, helping our farmers. You know, I'm proud of my record, and I better be, because the voters in our district say, if you're not getting the work done, we're going to hire somebody else. I have no problem with that. I think that's the way the Congress ought to work, and I wish everybody had those kind of competitive seats. You know, it can get a little rough, and it can be a little hectic, and but it's good for the country. That's what should happen.
Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney, our friend and in office since 2013. Sean, as always, good luck, and keep on keeping on. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Alan.